mom taking me to a mental institution. I was 5.
We were told to believe a lie, and we were told the people that told the truth were crazy.
Take me to hotels and casinos and pass me off to people. Money was always involved with it as well. And basically created me, I guess, a petri dish placed in an artificial womb. Putin was in my bloodline. We have a castle. You're a princess. My mom is a breeder for the bloodline. Things pop in and out of the womb with me. But I knew it was not my mom's womb.
Hey, friends. Dan Duvall. Looking forward to a podcast today that is going to be exhilarating and shocking and fascinating all at the same time. I want to remind all of you listening that danduvall.com is the home of the Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall podcast. I want to invite you guys that are following this, if you happen to be a survivor on a healing journey, to check out overcomeraccelerated.com, which is our learning platform for survivors. And with that said, we have a lot going on at Bride Ministries as well. Remember, the ministry website can be found at bridemovement.com. We're going to get started.
You're listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall.
Welcome back to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. I'm here with another new friend. Her name is Lindsay, and I'm very excited to talk to her. She is going to bring testimony of the things she has seen firsthand and witnessed. She is a survivor of satanic ritual abuse and other things, and I am just so proud of her. Lindsay, welcome to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here and be able to share my testimony.
Well, we've been taking a journey for several years. We love your family at Bride Ministries Church here in Katy. And, you know, when I met you, I don't think either of us had an idea of what was really sitting underneath the surface.
No, it was very little. I had very little. Had some idea of it, but not the full extent of it. And it was something I didn't really want to touch a whole lot of. I was willing to touch some stuff that was kind of, I didn't have a choice to, but going deeper, I really didn't want to have to touch on. So,
well, we're going to touch on a whole lot of things today.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm very excited to have this conversation for a number of reasons. And one of them is that I actually have not been your coach. I've been your pastor.
Yeah.
But there are so many things I'm going to get to ask you about today that I don't even know.
Yeah. There's a lot, and stuff that has just recently also been uncovered. So
yes.
I get to share some new revelations.
Wow.
In this journey as well, and as I continue.
Yes.
Going on this journey and the coaching, more stuff continues to get unlocked.
Wow.
So,
well, let's start here. You know, every story has an origin point. Obviously, you were born into a family, and why don't you just get us started with a little bit of background on the family you were born into, the nature of that interaction, and give us some idea of how much of what was going on you were aware of at the surface.
So with my family, I was with my mom and dad. They were only married for about 6 months. My mom would always pass me off back and forth to my dad when she didn't want me, or I would go and be with my grandmother. So at a very young age, there was just a lot of weird stuff that would go on that I guess I didn't think about a whole lot. I just kind of was real passive about it or didn't think of it as unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But when I would be with my mom, she would take me to random places. Remember, especially when I was about 5, she would take me to hotels and casinos. and pass me off to people, and to very high profile people that I would go and do. There'd be different types of rituals and different types of things that would be done in wow. these different rooms. It got to a point to where I had enough of it. And I, in the lobby floor, when she passed me off to this woman, I flipped out. I started screaming and would not go with that woman. So my mom ended up taking me to a mental institution where I was there for a good while. And they did some of, I was like electrocuted, and it's like my programming wasn't working, so they had to go in and try to reprogram me to behave. But with my family life, there was never...
How old were you when she put you in the mental institution?
I was five.
At five?
Mm-hmm. I was five.
They let a parent put a five-year-old child in a mental institution, no questions asked.
No questions. And when she took me, she passed me off to another woman. And I watched her walk away through double doors, and she didn't even look back.
Oh, my gosh.
But that was nothing unusual. She would, at random times in the middle of the night, just go and drop me off at my dad's house. They would hear me screaming down the street coming, and she would just hand me off to him and go. My dad, you know, he didn't agree with a lot of the stuff that would, I don't believe he wanted part of it. My grandmother, when I was 6 months old, paid for him to leave and go to Hawaii to get away from my mom. He called and tried to get my mom to come to Hawaii and bring me. Trying to get away from all of it, she refused to. And so he stayed there until I was two and a half years old. I didn't see him again.
Do you believe that your dad was, maybe we could call it a bloodline outsider?
So I do know that both of the bloodlines come from deep royal bloodlines.
Both do.
Both do.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
So it is very... intertwined. And even when I was trying to figure it all out, because I knew once I started learning a little bit more about some of my situations that I had, I knew that I needed to look deeper into my bloodline so I could try and get some freedom, because I knew bloodline and generational curses, and that was a real big deal to get freedom. So I started looking into my bloodline. And as I started looking in, and I was seeing like different names intertwined, like, you know, the like incest, they were completely just intertwined with each other. I was like, I've seen that name before, but over on this side. So it started getting very like tricky, very confusing, to where even like I would have to sit, like step away for a second, because it was like, what is going on? Like it was so tangled and twisted and everything, the way it would go. But they would all, they all went back to like, I mean, Odin was in my bloodline. So
Whoa. When
I seen that, and then the royalty, like I've always been told, we have a castle, you're a princess. You know, when I was younger, I didn't think anything of it, or related to presidents. And so I just didn't think anything of it until I started learning more about what exactly that means. So I know the bloodlines, where it comes from and what they're doing. My mom is a breeder for the bloodline, for the bloodlines. So she has several children that I know about and those that I don't know about. And I don't even have contact with most of them. I have one that I have contact with, and my brother who died.
My goodness.
Yeah. So my dad's side, Freemasonry, I mean, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were involved in some stuff too, but not nearly as deep as my mother's side.
Okay. Okay. And so when you were about 6 months old, your mother's mother paid your father, who was a total Freemason bloodline, to leave and go to Hawaii.
No, but that was his mom.
His mom.
Mm-hmm. And she could not stand, like the families could not stand each other.
Oh.
But they were, they had to get married. Like that was their, to be honest, I don't even think my mom and dad liked each other. So my dad's mom paid him to leave. And so then I spent a lot of time with her. So when my mom would do her random not wanting me, doing what she had to do with me, and then dropping me off, it was with my grandmother, my dad's mom.
Was she a place of safety?
And to an extent.
Uh-huh.
But she also had some things that she had to do, not that she wanted to, but she would pick the lesser of the two evils. That she was also. They had real big pull in like the casinos, real well-known business and everything. So very well-known within Reno. So, and in that community.
Wow. Okay, so you were essentially born to two bloodline individuals,
mm-hmm.
Royal houses, descended from Western Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Odin, goodness gracious. You know, I remember years ago when I first came out with the prayer called Freedom from Fallen Angel Bloodlines and Genetics, people are like, why would you do that? And I was like, oh, these fallen angels have bloodlines.
Yeah.
You didn't know? So if you didn't know.
Yes, very much so.
Wow. And I can only, I want to ask you about Yggdrasil, but we'll get to that later. So moving on, now these memories about being taken to the casinos by your mother and other places, did you always know that?
Yeah. So I had like, it was almost like a core memory.
Okay.
That I did have, like I would remember, but it didn't make sense to me. For the longest time I would remember, but like, it just didn't make sense. Like why would I be a young child at these places? At these hours of the night. So then as I started going through mm-hmm. my journey, it started to unravel some of these things and my memories started to make a little bit more sense.
So what other core memories, we'll call them, did you have as you, so we're not focusing so much on what came out through the healing journey, mm-hmm. but actually at the surface.
So I remember a lot of times watching with my mom, it's when I lived with her, Alice in Wonderland. That was one of the things that seemed like every Sunday night would be on. I was watching it all the time. On like repeat, it seemed like it was always Alice in Wonderland, Alice in Wonderland. But I would also remember being also having things done to me in a doctor type office.
Oh.
During watching Alice in Wonderland. So come to find out that was a programming that was taking place with rituals that were happening at the same time. And of course they blamed me. They told me I had to go because I did something wrong. And so I ended up having to go to the doctor. I mean, and it was just crazy things that made no sense. Like I was told that things that this doctor was doing to me was because I ate the wrong part of a watermelon. Like weird, like it just, as a kid, be like, whatever. But as an adult, I would sit and think about these things. And I was like, it doesn't even make any sense. But anytime anything happened to me, it was always my fault. I would go to random houses or like trailers out in the country to go, I would be told to go look at dogs or to go get certain animals. But afterwards, I was always getting like glass or rocks or something like picked out of my, I was always having to be patched up afterwards. They were rituals that I was being taken to. Not everything was stuff being done to me, but also the things that I had to watch as well. So that stuff started to come back to me. So those are some of my main ones when I was younger. I remember a little bit being with my grandmother and like being passed off to different people. So to me, that was always very strange. And then the things that, you know, also my dad would tell me, plus my mom would tell me, it was always about money with me. Basically, like I was a commodity to the family. One didn't want to pay, the other one wanted the money. So I was constantly being passed around, and money was always involved with it as well.
Do you believe that money was flowing to both your mother's side and father's side as a result?
Mm-hmm, very much so. And like my grandmother, my mom's mom, she hated me before I was even born and cursed me, like did not want me to come. And I know it's because I was to take her place within the bloodline, that part of it, her job and what she was doing. So
we're going to come back and kind of revisit all of these things in a second, like round. But I want to just get this ironed out as well. So you went through these things. You had these core memories, but the memories themselves were like before and afters. It sounds
mm-hmm,
like
yeah.
I remember being in the casino, but I don't know why. And I remember going to these trailers and getting animals, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
And being told weird things.
Mm-hmm.
Watching Alice in Wonderland, but why not something else? There's a lot of other things on TV, whatever.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you, at what point did you leave your parents' custody?
It wasn't until I was 19.
Hold on.
So with my mother, I was physically abused by her off and on up until I was 11. And then my dad took full custody of me. With her, after I was placed in the mental institution, had all the things that were done to me, I remember my dad coming and getting me out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And the agreement was with custody, that she had to surrender custody so he could come and get me out. I don't know the full details of all of that. But so then I was with him for up and then it was my, I was in fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
She calls again. Mm. And in between, I would go see her and it would be, there was always some type of chaos or some type of issue. Every single time I was with her, there was something crazy going on. And I was always right there, always involved in it. And so by that time she calls again, fourth grade. I was in the fourth grade. And I hear them fighting. They're arguing on the phone. And then my dad says, your mom's on the phone. She wants to talk to you. She wants me to come live with her again. And I knew everything inside of me was just like, I didn't want to go back. Now, granted, with my dad, there wasn't the physical abuse, but it was more of the emotional detachment. There was really no, I didn't feel the love. I didn't, but it was still, to me, that was better than the physical stuff. I told her I didn't want to go live with her. She pulled the I'm not your mom and all of that. So then I said, fine, I'll go and live with you. I went back. I lived with her. And not only was it the abuse on me, but I watched her, the guy that she was with at the time, abuse her as well. Knives. I mean, it was such bad. I would have to go and call the cops because the abuse was so bad. So I would always think I'm going to watch my mom die. But then in return, she'd beat me so bad. And one time I actually thought she was going to kill me. And that was the last time that she was able to abuse me because I started a fire at the apartment complex. I knew that if I did something bad, she would get rid of me.
Oh, wow.
Because that's how it always was. Anytime something bad would happen, because that's what I was always told. This happened to you because you did this. So she took me and put me somewhere else. So I knew if I do something bad, she'll get rid of me. And then I won't have to take this pain anymore. My only concern was my sister. I did worry about my little sister that was there. But I ended up starting a fire, and it set the whole back part of the apartment complex up in flames. So, of course, my dad, he came got me. I had to go to court for all of that stuff. And a thing that really always stood out to me about that was, even though I told the judge why I did it and what my mom was doing to me, yeah, he shed a tear for me, but nothing ever came about. She never got in any type of trouble. My sister still continued to live with her. I got off with no type of trouble or anything. And now I know it's because he knew who my family was.
Right. I was told by someone wise, they said, Daniel, you have to understand, in this country, we have a legal system. It's not a justice system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we also have a lot of compromised, bought and sold judges.
Yes.
Wow. I am so sorry that happened to you.
Yeah, and it's a terrible, thing. But it just brings to light the true evil that does go on within these systems and how it depends on who you know mm-hmm. and whether or not there will be any type of justice.
Right. So that's at 11, you went back with your dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you were with him until 19?
Yes. And I would go and see also my sister, mm-hmm. Which lived with my grandmother, my mom's mom. And my mom didn't have any of us kids, only up until a certain age. And that was it. So I would go see my sister and my grandma. And my grandma was retired from the Reno Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
So she had a lot of different connections. Also, a lot of the Freemasons. She was a Eastern Star herself, like my grandmother, my aunt, all of them. So there would be weird things, that we would experience when we would be there too as well. And another one of the Disney programs we would always watch was Cinderella. So it's just that it was always playing that where she would let us watch, movies that most grandparents or parents would not let their younger grandchildren watch. So we weren't allowed to be out if we called him Papa, if he was there, we weren't allowed to be out and around him. We ate by ourselves. We didn't eat with them. It was just really weird, stuff where we could be a lot of rules we couldn't do. So I would spend my time between the two, my dad and my grandma as well.
So by some outward vantage point, it may have actually looked like you had an overprotective childhood where you were very sheltered, but not
exactly. And it was only certain people were allowed to touch me.
Mm.
And my dad wouldn't even never lay a hand on me.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom would even say with my stepmom, she knows that she's not allowed to touch you. Weird stuff that she would say to make it was only she was, or whoever she was to pass me off to, they were allowed to touch me. They were never allowed to leave marks on me, no visible markings. Nothing.
So at 19, you left.
Mm-hmm. I did. I went to Alaska.
And you went to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How hard or not hard was that transition by the point you made it?
So it wasn't hard, really, because mm-hmm. I was one of those, I guess you could say, kind of carefree as a teenager. I just didn't care. And I think because I just kind of gave up on life anyways,
oh.
So I just didn't, I was really bad into crystal meth. I got into crystal meth really bad, to the point where I got kicked out of my house. Mm-hmm. And this was like, I graduated high school, and within 6 months, like, my life just kind of started spiraling, like, really bad, out of control, getting into all kinds of bad stuff. But I ended up getting into the crystal meth, getting kicked out of my house, got in a really bad car accident that ended up sending me to the hospital and my best friend to jail because she was drinking. And at that point, we didn't really know what we were going to do with our lives. Like, she had a DUI, couldn't work, lost her job. I went to the hospital. I was hurt. I couldn't work, you know, for a good amount of time because of the injuries. And so we had no money to pay our rent or anything. So we're just kind of sitting there. Our fake IDs got taken away. So just everything that we, just everything that we did, we're like, well, what are we supposed to do? Everything, you know, the drug dealer went to jail. So, like, all of these things, we're just sitting there like, we have nothing to do anymore. Like, there's just, but her family was very much involved in the church. I knew nothing about Jesus. I heard of God. That was about it. Thought God hated me. So really, you know, never thought about any of that kind of stuff. So she used me as an escape goat because she was going to go to, they're having a discipleship and, like, Bible school in Alaska. And it was, she had put her name on the list thinking Alaska, they'll never pick me. But she did because that's what her parents told her she needed to do. Sure. And this was previous, before all the trouble her and I had gotten into. And then she changed her mind. She didn't want to go anymore. So the pastor was coming from California because they were visiting family to meet her at a church. And she said, Lindsay, come with me so that we can get out of there. Like, I was her excuse to leave. So I was like, okay. And we get there. And, you know, I'd always been very curious about Jesus, because the funny thing is my real mom, my abuser, she had told me about salvation.
Really?
Because in one of her assisted livings that she was living at, a pastor came. Mm-hmm. And knowing now, he had, like, words of knowledge about her life and what she had been through and gone through, and it, like, touched her. And so she said that she accepted Jesus. I didn't even know what that meant. I didn't know what salvation meant. I didn't know what accepting Jesus meant, but I wanted it just from listening to her and what she was saying. Like, I believed it because I could hear it, the sincerity of it when she was talking about it. So I wanted it.
How old were you when she had that encounter?
17.
Okay, so this is way later. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was 17. Because we were raised, I was baptized Catholic.
Okay, yes.
And born in a Catholic hospital.
Goodness.
Yeah, so my family is very much, it was the Catholic stuff.
Yeah.
I tried looking, going to churches to get saved. Even called one of my friends and said, hey, you want to go get saved? You know, not even really knowing what that meant, but the churches were all, the wow. doors were all closed. So I just kind of gave up on it and forgot about it. So when that pastor, he's there, and we walk into the church and he sees me, and he said he knew that I was one of the reasons that they were there, and asked me if I knew Jesus. And I looked at him and said, no, but I'd like to. And so that kind of blew her whole using me as an scapegoat to get out. But so I was the last student they accepted for that school. And normally it was, I shouldn't have fit any of the qualifications. It was for people who were already established in the church, part of these certain churches. And but he told the senior pastor that he really felt strongly that I was to be there. So my best friend's dad paid my tuition and paid my airfare, and we were gone within a couple of months to Alaska, North Pole, Alaska.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah.
I did not know there was a Bible training center up there.
Yes. Yep. Through the Assemblies of God Church.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it was, they built a dorm. They built a dorm back behind the church, and that is where a student lived. It was very sheltered, very...
Yeah.
It was difficult.
I can imagine. Okay, so that was the escape route. That's also how you met Jesus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when you said the sinner's prayer, when you committed your life to him, I mean, what was the immediate shift for you?
You know, and it's really funny because I remember feeling like excited because yes. I'd been like looking for it. And then the opportunity had passed and it's like it was there again.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, afterwards, we went and stole a car. Like, so I was excited, but I didn't know that I thought I was just adding him to my life.
Wow.
So that was just my way to heaven. Like that was, and I didn't even know what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
So I was adding him to my life. I didn't know anything different. So I just continued doing life as usual. And, but I truly believe thinking about it. And as I was talking to others about it when I was 17, hearing about my mom and how I just believed right away, I believed in that salvation. I almost kind of wonder if that's truly when I became saved. It's just believing right then and there that Jesus was the answer, that he was my salvation.
So we're going to go back now. And you talk about the bloodlines you got from the royal mm-hmm. houses
yeah.
in Europe. But there's another bloodline that came through the Cherokee Nation.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
So that's my dad's side.
Okay.
They came over and married right into the Cherokee Nation. The tribe was called Going Snake
okay.
Tribe. And with that, you know, they believe a lot of the, you know, different spiritual abilities. And so they wanted that included into the bloodline, into, I don't know, I guess, for more of the spiritual abilities or gifts
mm-hmm.
that there are within the Cherokee, you know, people or Native American people.
And let me ask you this question. Speaking of spiritual abilities and gifts, what is your experience? Did you experience life as, you know, certain abilities and gifts being inherent to your lived experience?
Yeah, so I've been always very in tune with the spirit world.
Okay, always.
Always. Up until when I got older,
mm-hmm.
and it was like kind of like a block got
okay.
put there. And I don't know if it's because I was told I was crazy or, you know, so I just decided to kind of shut that part of my life out. But as a kid, I would see things. I would hear things. Actually, I had what were like two guardians always with me. They would be there like when I was sleeping. They would wake me up to get up in the night to do things, go places.
These were not good guardians.
No.
No, mm-mm. They were more like...
I believe it was bloodline.
Wow.
They were part of the bloodline. Yeah. And I was never scared. So I would see these things and it didn't scare me. If anything, I was really intrigued by all the spiritual stuff. My name would be called all the time by things, and it didn't faze me, not at all, not one bit.
What did the guardians look like?
They reminded me of like the old Victorian age, you know, the outfits that they would wear, the clothes that they would wear, like the big, like the hats and the, you know, like the wigs and how they would wear the wig. That's what they looked like.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's from as early as you can remember, there were just all this activity and, mm-hmm. and you weren't scared of it.
It did not scare me. No. Even when I got older and when I would experience
mm-hmm.
spiritual things, it did not scare me.
So now because it's the story kind of sounds like they wanted you out of your father and your mother. Like they wanted that combination for a reason. And by they, I'm not sure who they are. So I'm actually going to ask you, do you believe, number one, that your conception was a natural conception? And number two, who do you think wanted your parents to have you?
No. So I know that my conception was not natural. Mm-hmm. And this is actually something that was just recently revealed. I always had kind of a knowing because of things that I would hear, like on the inside, that would be said, like, oh, we created you, like always tell me they made me. And I never fully understood it, but like, you know, I just ignored, like, okay, whatever. But I didn't look like really anybody in my family. So everybody else is like dark eyes. I have the green eyes. I have, you know, just all the different features. I don't really look like anybody in my family. And I always wondered, like, why don't I really, yeah, I might have a few of the features, but not really. And it's because they pulled from my mom and my dad and basically created me in a petri dish or like all the gene editing. So they got to pick the traits and what they wanted me to have, and then placed also some of the non-human DNA, blood or whatever inside of there as well. So, and then I was placed in an artificial womb.
Whoa.
And when I had seen that for the first time, because I had never seen it before, mm-hmm. I seen me for the first time as a baby mm-hmm. in the womb, but I knew it was not my mom's womb. Mm-hmm. And I would see things pop in and out of the womb with me. So, and it was a constantly in and out, different types of, beings, but also soul parts of other people as well. So they basically, I was like a designer baby, or how they wanted me to look. And so they would call me that, they would tell me they were my creator. So when I learned this, the first thing that Jesus told me was, I belong to him.
Come on.
That he created me. So he made it very, he made it the first thing before revealing everything to me that I was his. Wow. And he's, because that was like what I really needed to know before all of that got opened up to me.
And this all makes sense, especially when you add the piece that you don't look like your family. Yeah. I mean, that's significant.
Yeah.
And I've never met any members of your family, so I wouldn't have known any of this. So now how you said that they used your mom as a breeder. Mm-hmm. So for you, do you think that meant that your mom was inseminated with multiple children that began in an artificial womb? Do you think that they just borrowed her DNA over and over for multiple children? What do you think?
Well, I do know that there was also a lot of physical people that mm-hmm. they would specifically have her. She's had seven children with seven different people.
Wow.
And then the others that I do not know about. I do believe that they did it physically, but then also artificially as well.
Okay.
And I do believe that a lot of her children were ripped from her before even having a chance to type any type of connection, or it was specifically for certain agendas.
Do you think your mother ever experienced vanishing pregnancies?
Yes. Because I myself, Haley actually is a twin.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so one was taken from us. And the weird thing is that my mom
Well, and just for the audience's sake, who is Haley?
Haley's my oldest, oldest daughter. So, 19. But when the twins were there, and then when we went back, and I was in my second trimester, the other one was gone, just gone. And they made it seem like it was no big deal. And now this was on a military, you know, military hospital. So they made it like it was no big deal that one of the twins was missing, one of the babies was gone. But when I had talked to my mom and told her about it, she's like, oh, well, if you had twins, I would have wanted one. So I knew right then and there, I thought that was weird, and I never thought more about it. Mm. But just within the past maybe year now, the Lord started really bringing that back up for me to, I had to deal with that, the loss of that baby.
Yes.
And so then all of the connecting all of the pieces, and that she was taken.
Wow. So coming back to the whole conversation, you were in an artificial womb. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that that inorganic environment produced certain deficits in you that are like core longings and voids?
Yeah, because I would always feel empty inside.
Yeah.
I would just wake up. I didn't like to even go to sleep as a kid. I didn't like going to sleep. I didn't like how I'd feel when I would wake up. I would wake up and I would just feel an emptiness. Always just so empty inside. I would just want to cry. And it never made sense. I always felt just so off from everybody else. I didn't understand why I was so weird. I always felt weird, different. Why I couldn't just be happy, or why it seemed like all these weird or bad things would always happen to me. When I would see my siblings, my other siblings from my dad and my stepmom, you know, they were happy, normal, you know, had good lives. And I'm just sitting there trying to figure out like what went wrong with me. And so then I just, came to the conclusion God hated me.
So interesting. Okay. So you actually, from your observational standpoint, perceived that you were almost like the Cinderella with the stepsisters, that you were the one that was like the odd man out and the worker bee, and clearly trafficked.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious. Okay. So, and your mom really didn't have that maternal connection with you at all.
Not at all. And to be honest, now knowing what I know,
yeah,
my mom was never her. It was never her front person. Most of the time, I was with different personalities and parts.
But you didn't have the terminology for it
to understand it. But I knew because I could tell before she would go into these. All of a sudden, she would change and go into these rages, and that's when I would know that it was about to get really bad for me. Because I would see the change, the switch. And so I knew it was just not her. And even when I got older and I would talk to her on the phone, like it would just be weird, random stuff that she would say. Like, and I know it's like, it's not even her that I'm talking to, but I didn't understand it.
And was your mom pretty dissociated from the type of physical abuse she was perpetrating against you?
Yes. Very much so. Mm-hmm. Because she would even say to me, like, that she'd tell me all the time, I never even laid a hand on you. Only time I would do anything is spank you, and that's if you were bad. Like, and I would sit there and be like, are you serious? Like, because I would know the older I got what she did to me.
Yeah.
And so I would just kind of let it go and not say anything because I just, at that point, just kind of thought she was crazy.
Sure. Sure. And that's exactly it. You know, this is why this type of abuse is so generational. It's, you know, once the parts get their jobs and end up demonized and then perpetrate certain things, the storyline is completely hidden from the presenter.
Yeah.
It's just not even available to them. And so there are a lot of older generation that sit in complete denial of how much damage they did. And I so appreciate the way you're articulating it, because you're giving voice to a lot of listeners. I mean, lived experience as well. It's the same thing. And so, but you know, when you bring up the part about the artificial womb, the artificial insemination, like all of this being created, that also lends itself to explain the maternal disconnect that mm-hmm. you had with your mother, why she seemed so far away. I mean, and of course, we could say, well, she was herself damaged, clearly, abused, clearly, and had her own history. But that part matters. And so thank you for explaining all of that. Now, are you the only child between your mother and your father?
Yes.
Okay. And yeah, because everyone else for your mom was a different person mm-hmm. at that point. Now, did you ever get to the bottom of where this facility where the artificial womb was may have been?
So it is very big. It's a very big operation.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just me in there. I seen several artificial wombs full of several babies. So it is a very big, it's like it's...
Are we talking dozens, hundreds, or thousands?
Thousands.
My gosh.
Like they are creating their own race.
Thank you for saying that. No, please continue.
That's exactly, they are creating their own race. Going almost back to, you know, it reminds me of when the angels came and were mating with the women. Mm-hmm. But this science has gone so far to where they don't even need, it doesn't need to be like that. All they need is to get is the DNA mm-hmm. and they can create, and now they have the wombs to put it all in. So they are creating their own race of what they want these people to have. What they want them to look like, the genetics they want them to have. And it's like it's being filled with, like, held up with essence.
Wow.
And it's Atlantis is connected. It's a very multi-dimensional operation that is going on.
Years ago, one of the things that Jesus told me, he said, I am rehumanizing my people. It was not very long before our deliverance resources at Bride Ministries began to go deep into the genetics aspect of the conversation. When we realized that a lot of the gates that the powers of darkness were claiming as legal rights sit not in sin, that is just what a person did that was wrong, but beyond that, also in specific markers in the genetic code that these various groups were claiming as theirs. They said, well, they carry our DNA, therefore we have rights.
Yes. And that is what they would tell me. They would tell me, we created you. We gave you this, so we can take it away. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with my health, certain things, I would start getting attacked in certain areas because it was like I was touching on an area, they didn't like it. So they would just go in and start trying to take away or mess with my DNA, with my body. So, like, it is very, when I seen that, it was hard to see, but it's like I already had a knowing, but not only was it hard, I guess, to see it for just myself, but to see, like, all of the people that it's being done to. Like, it's just like, oh, my gosh. And then I, you know, just to see that their plans, though, and what they think that they can do to fool God, it's laughable.
Yeah.
Really, because my spirit and Jesus kept telling me that I am... a glitch in the system.
Come on.
And I didn't fully understand it. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I get it, you know. But literally, I have completely destroyed everything they've tried to do. Their programming with me, it would end up not sticking. They would have to keep trying to do all these different things to continuously try to get me to do their agenda, to do what they wanted, but it just would not stick. And even now, here I am on my healing journey, them not expecting me to get this far and discovering all of these things that they're doing. And it's literally Jesus placed me in these areas so I can completely help tear it apart.
Come on. You need to preach that. we'll have you preach one of these weeks. Come on. So look, So I want to continue exploring this early on, right? So you are genetically engineered. Let me ask you this question. Does the term Hitler Project resonate with you, or do you think what you went through was something completely independent?
I think that a lot of this stuff is connected.
You think it's connected?
Very interconnected.
Yeah.
It's just so, like, when I look and I see it, it's just like a bunch of different things intertwined.
Okay.
Like a big web.
Yes.
So I do believe that it's very much entangled with it, mm-hmm. but not completely.
Got it.
Part of it, if that even makes
sense. Well, it makes sense to me. So okay. We'll just go with that. So look, yeah, I mean, and this is a thing, you know, that what I think people need to understand is that we are in the midst of a great awakening right now, Lindsay. And I say, you know, when the survivors speak and are heard, it's going to force a change on how we perceive the reality we occupy. We were told to believe a lie, and we were told the people that told the truth were crazy, and the people that told the truth were confined to insane asylums and mental health institutions to be reprogrammed.
Yes.
But there is a massive agenda to cover the truth. And it's so that they are, I believe, the kingdom of darkness wanted to buy time. I can't imagine if, you know, like people that have the ability to pull the purse strings and have control over powers were not programmed and also able to come to a full moral conviction about what's being done to destroy lives and futures and people in general, especially in some of these labs and bases and organizations. You know, it's like if you begin to pierce the veil on some of that and there was a move to begin shutting it down, suddenly the kingdom of darkness and their beast agenda mm-hmm. would come into a real problem. And so they've been buying time by creating this, what I call a false reality overlay. It's like, no, we're not doing that. I mean, we are, but, you know, wink, wink. If you say we are, we'll lock you up, you know? And so I believe we're in a season where we're going to say it anyway.
Yeah.
And people are listening.
Yeah.
The people are going to listen to you.
Yeah.
This will be heard by a lot of people.
That's good. That's my biggest thing is just praying that, you know, God, of course, is number one, glorified, but that those who need to hear it and need it to be like confirmation that it will, and that a little bit of freedom will start just by hearing it.
Come on. But what I also want people to understand, because I'm sitting here talking to you, and you love Jesus, yes. is like it doesn't matter if a person was engineered in a lab and infused with all kinds of foreign genetics, including genetics from Atlantis. Like,
yeah.
Jesus is bigger than that.
Yes.
He is healing that and delivering people of that
yes.
and actually rehumanizing people
yes.
right now. Like yes. that's what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even so, like during my coaching session, when this was discovered and talking about it, my coach, she was wanting to know how I was doing with it because it was a big thing that was revealed and uncovered. And so, but as we're going through it and talking, you know, I seen Jesus right there with me in that artificial womb. I seen him. And so just like he was there with me and he placed me, he specifically placed me there as his weapon.
Wow.
And this is my assignment.
Wow.
And so, you know, I had to come to terms and just accept that this is my assignment. This is what I chose to do. I said, this is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to take everything the enemy has stolen. And I'm coming for it. I'm coming for it.
So you're born. Your mother is clearly used as a handler.
Yes.
For you. Mm-hmm. I mean, by five, she's delivering you to perpetrators in casinos. Who do you believe was your programmer early on?
To be honest, I know my grandmother, like a lot of it, she played a big part in it, but she did not want it to be me. I still am trying to figure out completely who, because I know my mom was my main handler, mm-hmm. and that she was used to mm-hmm. do a lot of the programming. But there is still, I believe, a person that is hidden that we are still waiting to get to reveal. And I don't know if it's because it'll be hard for me to accept who that possibly could be. But I've noticed with me in my journey, there's been a lot of one thing we will touch on and it will then reveal the next thing. It's like a big, and I can see it. It's like a map that plays out. So I'm still waiting to know who the main programmer was or is.
Okay. So, and so all we know is that there was definitely programming.
A lot of it, yes.
And they were using that to use you in rituals and for trafficking. So you had the surface memories of going to casinos. What other memories regarding the trafficking were you able to recover once you began on your healing journey?
So a lot of the places that they would take me, a lot of it was sexual abuse. A lot of it was watching what they would do to other people, other children. Also, a lot of it was ceremonies. That is like, and it being like a lot of the big political, a lot of big political people, important names that you wouldn't expect to do those types of things. But there were a lot of other children involved in it. I would be sometimes in rooms with, there would be lots of other children. And sometimes the other children would have to pick who went and who didn't. So it was to watch that kind of a thing. And it makes me believe that that's why I'm very protective of children. Is because of the things that I would have to see them do and pit it against each other just to try to save their own lives.
At these ceremonies and locations, do you believe that you ever witnessed shape-shifting?
Oh, I have seen shape-shifting. Yes. I know for a fact that there were not, it was not just human. I've actually been, I have had interactions with the beast. So, and I was not scared. So I just was never scared. I've seen him in the, like the beast form, in a different type of form. It was like a grayish, palish kind of a color. And like, I knew who it was, but anytime I'd see him, it didn't scare me. And I would see like reptilians, grays, had a lot of interactions with even UFOs. Even my sister remembers that kind of stuff, having interactions with and seeing UFOs.
I want to ask, have you ever questioned whether or not you had a twin?
Yes. Actually, just the other day, I was thinking that.
Just a thought. We'll have to come back around to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some other time.
Well, because when mm-hmm. I was asking about, because I never knew twins ran in our family. You know, because there's no twins. And the Lord told me that's because they take them.
I have interviewed a number of times Esther Ford. She is Sue Ford's hidden twin.
Okay.
And when she came on my podcast, she explained my sister, Sue Ford, who went by the name Bryce Taylor, who wrote the book Thanks for the Memories, and it began to expose the New World Order and a lot of deviant branches of our government, including certain presidents and all of that years ago. I mean, in the 90s. She basically explained that around 2019, she was swapped in to Sue's life, but she is not Sue. And she explains that she spent most of her life in underground locations while Sue was the surface world twin. So she refers to herself as Twin B. Her sister was Twin A, and they had what she described as one mind programming, so they could share memories. There was a back and forth, but really a lot back. So she always had her sister's surface memories and could be swapped into her life at times, but spent a lot of time in Europe, underground bases, Antarctica, and other locations. And now she's living her sister's life. And I mean, I believe her.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I believe it, too.
Wow.
Especially, yeah, because that was very much so when just trying to figure it all out, because I thought it was strange, you know, that I was pregnant with twins, because normally it's a family thing. It runs in the family. And so I was kind of just talking to God about it one morning, getting ready for work. And he's like, because they take them. And like, I just stopped and I was like, oh my gosh, like I couldn't even believe it. But yeah, it makes complete sense.
So you did see shape-shifting. Now I have to ask a little bit more about the beast.
Okay.
If you're okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you weren't scared.
No.
When you say I saw the beast, do you believe that this is the beast that we're talking about in Revelation 13, as in the beast that rises out of the sea, or the beast that rises out of the earth? There's two. We call them Antichrist and false prophet. Do you believe that we're talking about one of those guys?
I do. Because so I've had some of the programming just recently that was uncovered. It's a lot of different Disney programmings. The castle is in the center, and it's a bunch of different worlds. And they're all different Disney movies, worlds that are different programming. One of them is Beauty and the Beast, being married to the Beast. But, you know, he turns into Prince Charming at the end after the spell is broken. So when I really believe it's part of all the beast system, the beast end times, all the end times stuff. And when I would see him, I was not scared of him. He was always very kind of friendly with me, but at the same time would get angry too. But when I started my learning about stuff and going through and trying to break generational curses and bloodline stuff, he would have come to me and I would see like he had had claws and would rub them on and tell me that I belonged to him. So like an ownership type of a thing. It didn't scare me, it just creeped me out at that point. But any type of fear that they would try and put on me with that kind of, it just did not, it didn't work.
Mm-mm-mm. And this could be just like a yes or no question. Do you believe that the Jesuits were involved in any of this stuff?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I've had Svali on this podcast several times, and she mentioned to me, and actually also wrote about it in her three-part series on her testimony, that the Jesuit order was very committed to birthing Antichrist, which they believe is a modern-day Nephilim, the actual genetic offspring of Satan that is conceived in the womb of one of their people. And so they were working on it, and they finally began to birth some of these. And this was decades ago. And she describes one of them that she was quite familiar with. So it all seems to be painting one picture.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then the whole thing with the queen.
Well, I do, but these people don't. Let's talk about the queen. By the queen, I know that we're talking about Queen of England.
Yes.
Who's no longer alive, by the way.
Yes.
Let's talk about it.
So it was actually my first time ever having any type of coaching.
Mm-hmm. You mean with Bride Ministries?
With Bride Ministries, with anybody.
Okay. Wow.
But yes, Bride Ministries. So, nice. Because, you know, most of my stuff started out with just me and Jesus.
Yes.
And a lot of resources that were available online and your stuff as well. I told them about a reoccurring dream, what I thought was a dream of a dragon. It was with my mom, always with my mom. The dragon was the one thing that would kind of scare me. But it was like my mom loved it. My mom loved the dragon. Like, it was like her best friend. Like, was not scared of it. It was always with her. So when we discovered more, there was a region of captivity in England or in Scotland underneath a castle where this dragon was at. And I seen myself, a part of me, there as well with this dragon. There were councils. Overt royal councils, a dragon council. And we went in, dealt with all of that, the dragon, the councils, and then the realm got collapsed. After all of that, the park got cleaned up. We got a nice, pretty gown. And I didn't think anything of it because I was always told, I know that we have castles in Scotland. And royalty. So I think, you know, bloodline stuff. I didn't even think twice about it. We go in the next day for our next sessions, and it's announced that the Queen of England died. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, like, you know, no way. Like, there's no way. But, like, I kept thinking, like, was there something to do with it, with what we did yesterday? So then I just kind of ignored it, and we continued on. But that Sunday, as we were going to church, I looked more into it. The Holy Spirit was pressing, like, look into it more. It was the queen was in her castle in Scotland. And it was very much, in fact, because of what we just did. And I mean, I couldn't even believe it. So I was like, I've got to tell Dan. And it wasn't just me. You know, there were other people that had parts that were there, stuck in captivity there, and that were being used in really bad ways. And so they all got free as well.
My goodness. When you told me about that, I was just like, of course. You know, there is a significance to what Jesus is doing in this generation and age that cannot be, I think, overstated. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a big deal. When a survivor of satanic ritual abuse at high levels, a bloodline project steps out and says, you know what, I'm going to take a stand for the true and living God, mm-hmm. there are extraordinary consequences for the kingdom of darkness. And our God is a God of justice.
Yes.
And judgment.
Yes.
Vengeance and wrath. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't like that. People read the Old Testament. They're like, how dare Jesus be represented by this Yahovah God of judgment and wrath and vengeance? And it's like, do you know the opposition? Like, if you understand the depth of depravity of Satan and his kingdom and the things that have been done to defile people and God's creation and how committed those parties are to that evil agenda, you need a God of vengeance and wrath.
Oh, absolutely.
You need a God that's going to stick up for righteousness, for his children, for things that are good, deserve rescuing. I mean, nobody buys a chihuahua to be a guard dog.
Like, right.
You want the Rottweiler, okay?
Right.
You want that guy. You want, because, you know, and some of us, you know, we've gotten this fake image of God. It's like, oh, no, like God is just this, you know, little tiny, and he's just love only and, mm-hmm. and all that. No, God is a protector and a executor of justice and judgment because he loves.
Yes. But it was, you know, it was just... wild, because it was just recently before that I actually came to terms. I knew that I was a survivor. I knew it, but I had never confessed it. And for some reason that was very hard. And I think it's because there was, like you said, this false reality overlay that seemed more real than the truth. And so I knew that once I spoke it and I confessed it, it was real. And I was making it real. And so it was after our very first advance that I was finally able to confess it, that I was a survivor. And that is where it all just opened up for me, even more so.
My goodness. My goodness. Yeah, that was a wild testimony. And that was actually during one of our mentorship training weeks, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it was. From the students, they were students being trained underneath you. So, I mean, yeah, so very much so. It was just, I was just thinking like, wow, you know, God, that
yeah,
was amazing.
You know how humiliating it must be for the kingdom of darkness to realize that this ministry was actually executed by students, not even they were.
They told me that they were talking to each other when they heard my testimony and said, what did we do? So
God is good. You know, I all right. So I want to just take a few more steps and talk a little bit more about the journey that you took with the trafficking. So you were trafficked to ceremonies. You were trafficked to the hotels and casinos. There was shape-shifting. You met some pretty high-level individuals. Are we including Hollywood?
Yes, I've actually, I know that I have been to... and this was actually just recently, a few years ago, that not physically at this point, mm-hmm. but I was taken and I had seen like John Travolta at a ceremony. And I could, like, he was very, like, just looking in his eyes looked very, you could see it was like very wicked, very. And this was a few years ago, so I don't know if anything has changed since then, but there have been people that I have seen that are doing things or involved in things, and I know some of them are also very much controlled and have parts that will do things as well. So, yeah, there have been some.
Wow. So we had politicians... some Hollywood businessmen. You do believe the Jesuits were involved?
Oh yeah.
And Do you think this was, and coming back to the artificial womb, do you think this was a government or military facility?
I want to say both.
Okay.
I want to say they were, they're both connected with it, not just, because I also had gotten technology put into my body through this womb.
Right. Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about that. Now, a lot of people are in this hour talking about their experiences targeted individuals. Mm-hmm. They have all kinds of challenges, which include frequency harassment.
Yes.
Technology reacts strangely to them. Some of them report being able to be reprogrammed by televisions, mm-hmm. phones. Cell towers are really tough. And 5G network, which is now everywhere, is also challenging. They also report gang stalking, among other things. Sometimes we will, you know, rope in UFO stuff, all of that. And it seems like some of the problem for targeted individuals is best explained by technology resident in the body.
Yes.
Now, you're saying that being in this artificial womb, you believe they put technology in your body as you were in fetal development. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that.
So with me, because that's really where my journey began.
Uh-oh.
So I did not know I was a survivor. I knew, you know, I had a rough childhood and all that, but I would have never, my mind would have never gone there. I didn't even know what that was. So I first started off getting, it was after we moved to Fort Hood, because of West being the military. We went to Fort Hood. It was the main military base that was like, for me, I was so triggered. We moved there. I was just always a triggered mess. And I went and seen psychologist and psychiatrist. I was put on, first they put me on Zoloft to try and see if that would help me. And then that didn't do a whole lot, went back, put me on Adderall and started off like, you know, what seemed like a normal dose, but gradually started getting higher and higher. I started getting on my computer. I would go and open it up and I would have like things pop up, chats. I would start getting cussed out. I would find tunneling, all different types of tunneling into my computer, weird stuff on my phone. So then I started looking at Wes's stuff. Same thing. It would show. And then also females popping up, cussing me out, saying all kinds of weird, crazy stuff to me. My phone's, his phone. So at this point, I'm thinking, okay, Wes is up to something. He is doing something, targeting me, causing me pain, doing this stuff. And I kept asking him about it. Like, what is going on? And this is before I even knew what, like, any type of targeting was or meant. And so I wouldn't believe him. I just didn't believe him because everything I was seeing was right there. For me to see all the evidence that I needed, and it was pointing right at him. And at that time, he would be at lunch because he was in the military still, so he'd just be on his lunch break. And it seemed like that's when the activity would get, like, be the strongest. And so it got so bad to the point to where, like, we were fighting all the time. I was angry, constantly yelling, breaking stuff because I just could not find out what was going on. It started getting to where it would say like FBI surveillance van 1 and 2, like just weird, like random, just crazy stuff happening, to where I made Wes take me to his computer at work. I mean, I know his sergeants had to think like he was married to a crazy person. because I wanted him to prove to me that he was not doing this from work. And so he went, he took me, like, he was all about it, showing me that it was not him, trying to prove that he was innocent and does not know what's going on. At this point, it was getting so bad to where I almost left him and took the kids. And I was going to go to Reno. I called him and said, I'm leaving and I'm taking the kids with me. I don't know why you won't stop and why you continue to do this. I'm giving you the option, like the opportunity to make it right and tell me the truth, and you won't. So he ended up having to get his mom involved, and she came. He came in from work. We were able to talk. And I finally got to the point, I sat for a minute and I was realizing what it was doing to my kids. And one of my vows I had made when I was younger was I would never be like my mom. And as I was sitting and thinking what it's doing to my children, I was like, I don't know what to do. So I said to God, and you know, I wasn't really real spiritual. I didn't have a real good prayer life. It was very religious. And I said to him, though, I said, I don't know how to make this stop. I don't know what's going on. And so I chose to give it to him and not to look back again, to like just let it go, give it to him and let it go for the sake of my family and for my sanity, because I felt crazy. I felt like I was completely insane, and everybody around me looking at me like I was crazy as well. Because we had my brother-in-law is an IT tech. He even looked at the computers and he's like, I don't see anything. So it's like, it was for just me to see, like a show for me to see, that it then made me feel nuts. And then it made it look like I was crazy to everybody around me. So I stopped. When I told God, I gave it to him, I stopped. And that is when my health started going downhill.
Wow.
Technology became activated once I quit. They wanted me to go back to Reno.
Yes.
I was even almost abducted. There was a van following. I was with Tyler. He was 3. I was being followed around Walmart. I didn't even notice it because I wasn't feeling good. And I just wanted to get in, get what I need to get, and go back home. A woman stopped me when I was getting ready to leave. She pulled out to where she blocked me, and she told me I was being followed. And she told me that God told her to stay there and watch, to watch that van and to watch that guy. So instead of her going into the store, she stayed and she watched him follow me. And as I was getting ready to leave, he was too. And I truly to this day believe that was an angel. Because that was the only time I ever seen that woman. I mean, ever. And, or that car, anything. And just the whole thing of it, it just felt it was definitely very supernatural. So I called Wes right away, and he came from work and met me at home. And she followed behind to make sure he didn't follow. And he ended up not. So it's like once they weren't able to get me anymore with that and get me to leave Wes, they started coming up with different things to try and get to me. So the technology got activated.
Now, I've always believed that Morgellons is not a mental disorder or some kind of psychosis. Mm-hmm. I have, and I don't know why people would look at all kinds of things coming out of a person's skin and say, oh, you just have a mental complex. It's literally coming out of their skin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had that.
I did.
And I've always believed that that was actually driven by technology. My suspicion has been that diseases like that are actually the result of the body's reaction on certain external stimuli or internal, if it is technology that's been embedded or inserted. It is prolific among people that consider themselves targeted individuals. And wow, we are kind of just driving right towards this conversation and also out of time.
Oh,
Lindsay, we're going to have you back. Friends, there's a lot more that we're going to be talking about with her. But for now, you've been listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. And until next time, God bless and Godspeed.
You've been listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. Visit me at danduvall.com, where you'll discover merch, books, and the opportunity to engage in our private social network. Join the tribe by subscribing to our email list and supporting this podcast.